My name is Jean Balance. I work here at the EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, and I'll be serving as today's moderator and host for a Kluin Internet seminar that is entitled the Brownfields Inventory Tool, or BIT, which is a free web-based site inventory tool. This particular event is being sponsored by the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization and was scheduled to start at 11 a.m. We're getting started just a little bit late due to some technical glitches with our conference line, and again, I apologize for any problems you may have encountered in the delay. I just wanted to cover a few basic housekeeping items before we get started here, and then I'll switch things over to our instructor today. Basically, as a reminder to everyone, in case you haven't already downloaded the slides or logged in officially to the seminar, when you registered, you would have received a confirmation message that would have had information for today's event, including a specific URL or homepage for the seminar. On that seminar homepage, you were able to read a description of what we'll cover today, and we also sent out a reminder email last night, but this particular Internet seminar is going to cover a software application that's available via the web. And they have asked or recommended that if you can to actually go to the tool webpage, which you'll see on the seminar homepage as well as throughout the presentation, and actually try to log in and follow along during a live demonstration today. There will be a number of screenshots and slides, so if you don't have the time or don't have access to internet, you can still follow along with the presentation. But those of you who aren't sitting in front of your computers are encouraged to open up the BIT tool in a separate window to go along with some of the exercises and instructions that our presenter will cover today. But in addition to that seminar homepage, you should have either downloaded the seminar slides in one of a few formats or should have clicked on the button that said Go to Seminar and should be looking at the seminar slides starting on slide number one. I'm going to direct everyone to move over to slide number two, which is a basic housekeeping slide, and we'll cover a few simple items there. For those of you who have kicked over to the new conference line, again, my apologies for keeping you on the conference call limbo there for a few minutes, but we do ask that now that you have joined us that you keep your phone lines on mute by hitting either *6 on your phone or using your own local mute button. At the end of the seminar, we'll have time reserved for question and answers, and at that point, we'll provide instructions on how to take your phone off of mute by hitting *6, but until then, we ask that you try to minimize background disruptions by keeping your phone on mute. And we also remind you, do not put the call on hold. There may be background music or commercials that may actually interrupt the seminar. So again, just hit *6 to keep us on mute. Again, we should all be looking at slide number two, covering basic housekeeping items. On that slide interface, if you're streaming the audio or you're looking at it online, you should see a series of orange buttons that appear along the very top of the slides. You can use those icons to navigate through the slides. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow to the left will move you backwards one slide. Our instructor will be indicating today as he moves through his materials by the slide number. You can also use the numbered slide links that appear on the left of the page. There should also be a small question mark icon in those buttons along the top that you can use. You want to be sure to take your pop-up blocker off, and if you click on that, that'll open up a new window where at any point in time during the seminar, you can submit a comment or a question. Again, we're going to hold most of those comments and questions to the end of the session, but if you do have any technical problems, you can also use that icon to report those glitches to us. You just want to be sure to include a telephone number where you can be reached so that our support staff can actually work with you. Again, all questions will be held to the end. Everyone needs to keep their phone lines on mute. One final reminder is that this entire event is being recorded and will be archived and made available for free replay and download on Kluin. So if we did have any problems with the start time or someone wasn't able to get over to the correct phone line, we will be able to provide that archive to everyone who registered so they'll still be able to participate even if it is after the fact. I'm going to kick things over and turn it over to our instructor today in just a second. One last reminder is when we're all said and done today, there will be two final links we'll point you to on the very final slide. That first one will be a link to additional resources that we've compiled, which will include a link to the BIT homepage where you can actually go in and log in and participate in the live demo, as well as look at a variety of other resources that are available on the website. You'll also be able to download the seminar slides and any other additional information, such as other points of contact regarding BIT. The second link we'll point you to is a short seminar feedback form. We do ask that you take a minute or two to fill that out. There are some specific questions that are geared towards the content of today's seminar that will help the people who put it together greatly. If you're looking for confirmation of your participation, you can get a confirmation message sent to you for your records by filling out that feedback form. So with that, I thank you all so very much for keeping your phone lines on mute. Again, it's *6 to mute your lines. I apologize for the delay in the start time. And I think we are ready to kick things off to today's session. Again, we're here for the Brownfields Inventory Tool, or BIT, which is a free web-based site inventory tool. Our primary instructor today is Blaise Levin, who is working on a technical assistance to the Brownfields program through Kansas State University. Blaise, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go, Jean.
Okay, great. I think I'm going to direct everyone to move on to slide number 3 at this time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And I have just an additional housekeeping thing to emphasize that Jean already mentioned. And Jean, I have an idea here that you'll need to respond to on this for a second. But it would be important, if you could, to make a suggestion and open up a separate internet browser window and go to tab-org and go ahead and register or log in if you've already registered so that you can kind of get the maximum benefit of this. And to help me kind of know, how many people have done that, which will gauge in how much detail I go into these slides, I'm wondering, Jean, would it be okay if everyone who's logged in, if they typed in if they submitted a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Said logged in. Just simply say logged in, and then I'll kind of have an idea of how many people are really logged in and how much detail I should go into during this seminar. Can we do that?
Sure. Absolutely. So according to Blaise, if you have been able to open up the Bit tool in a separate internet browser window and you are actively logged in, if you click on the icon with a question mark on the top of your slides and just type a quick message to us to let us know that you have the tool open and you're logged in, that'll help him. If you are on the phone lines, Blaise, I think when you get to that start where you're going to go through the live demo, maybe we'll do a real quick poll with the people on the phone lines to see if they're going to also follow along that way.
That'd be okay. Great. That'll be very helpful. So, and if you, are unsure how to log in or any of that kind of stuff, I'm going to cover that later. So, don't panic and don't worry about it. And if you don't log in, don't worry about it either. I think you'll still benefit from this presentation. So with that, we'll get started. I'd like to thank Jean and Deb Orr, who set this up, and all of you for calling in and watching this, and we'll get started. So on slide 3, the Brownfields Inventory tool was released very recently, just at the end of last January. It's free, and it's completely web-based. We are doing a desktop version that will be able to be downloaded from this website. Slide 3 shows a screenshot of the actual homepage, and there'll be a download option there later once the desktop version is ready. But the web-based version is up and running. So if we move to slide 4, little background. This software was created to help EPA Response Grant and other EPA Brownfield Grant recipients with the survey and inventory, public record, oversight and enforcement, assessment and cleanup, and administrative reporting requirements that come along with those grants. Primarily, that's what it was established for. But it's useful to anyone that deals with environmental sites and data, whether you've received an EPA grant or not. A prototype of this, or an earlier version, was developed by EPA Region 8 in 2004. It was a MS Access application, and it worked great. It was created with a lot of input from tribes and tribal response grant recipients and different EPA programs like solid wastes. And so it was, designed to be more than a Brownfields application. But unfortunately, thanks to Microsoft updates, the way that application was created conflicted with those updates, and it kind of rendered it useless, unfortunately. So under our TAB grant from EPA headquarters, we went ahead and recreated what was called the Site Inventory Manager. We called it the Brownfields Inventory Tool, and we went through a beta testing period with some tribal regional planning agency and environmental professionals, and now we're talking today, showing it to you. So moving to slide 5, it's just a little more about the features. It's password protected. All the data you put in it is password protected. You set up an account. It's yours. You're the owner of it. You can grant permission for others to have access and to even edit that data, and I'll show how that works in a little bit. But that's totally only if the owner of the account grants that permission. In addition to being a database, there's a lot of other features such as an import and search and export functions to rapidly move data around. And there's reporting features also that are very useful that I'll be talking to you about. If we go to slide 6, a little bit more about what BIT can do. It is focused on, you know, dealing with brownfield site data. And in fact, in the screenshot here, you'll see kind of how the hierarchy of the site works. And basically, when you get into the guts of it, the site data that you see in there that's listed there kind of is set up kind of like the brownfields process is set up. You know, you have a site. It has some basic information. Generally, you do an assessment on the site. That may involve sampling, may involve cleanup, may involve putting institutional controls in place, and it usually always involves information about redevelopment and reuse for future users. But in addition to the brownfields kind of specific data, there's other environmental data that can be input as well on the administrative side, such as complaints, information about complaints can be logged, site inspections, enforcement. And this is where, you know, other types of sites such as, you know, RCRA, if a tribe or even a city has a solid waste program, you know, they can use those features for those kinds of sites. It also allows you to track funding. You can upload and view documents such as, you know, phase one reports and all that to site for sites. You can also use an activity log just to log a litany of miscellaneous happenings about the site that may not apply to some of the other data categories we've talked about. So there's all kinds of things. And if you look farther down under the quick links part of this slide, there's a generate reports feature that includes being able to electronically generate and submit multiple property profile forms to the EPA. There's also a view sites on map feature that allows you to make simple maps thanks to a tie-in with Google Earth. So it's very comprehensive and it's pretty straightforward, really, to use. So that was the whole idea, something that's a pretty useful tool that's easy to use, and I think we've succeeded in doing that. So let's go to slide 7 and look at the outline of what we're going to talk about here today. We're going to talk about kind of how to get started using BIT, about site-specific and administrative applications of BIT, and then we'll talk about some custom search exports and imports to move large amounts of data quickly. And I'm going to try to talk about this in terms of, you know, if you're a city user or if you're with a redevelopment or a tribal agency or whether you're an EPA user, because it turns out too that EPA folks could use this to track their targeted brownfield assessment work, which is something they need to do as well. So there's a lot of different ways, different types of people can use BIT. Moving to slide 8, we're going to start talking about getting started. And I'm going to show you some features that, you know, anyone can get to when they go to BIT, whether they're logged in or not, to start with. Those items I'm going to be talking about are circled on the screenshot. So we'll go to slide 9 and show you that the resources that are in BIT are pretty useful. If you look along the top, the red colored bar and click the resources link, this is what you'll see. And a couple of the most important things in here is a compilation of all the individual page instructions, user instructions, that you normally can get to just as you are working in BIT. And many of these are based on EPA property profile form reporting requirements. And if you need more information on that as you're, you know, working in BIT, you can always open up resources and open up the property profile form reporting requirements in a separate window, and you get more information on what it is you're supposed to be doing, because it can be kind of complicated if you're not used to it. So that's an important reference that you want to remember is in there. You can also see there's a tutorial and there's some other things in there as well that, that could be useful. Okay, moving to slide 10, there's also a search feature that's it searches those resources. It does keyword searches. It doesn't search the data in that you've entered into BIT. That, there's a separate way to do that that I'll talk about. But if you're just looking, say, if you're trying to get more information on what the requirements are for entering latitude or longitude in a, on a screen somewhere, you can't find it, you can just go to search, type latitude in, and it'll give you a response of, you know, where you can find information on that. So that's kind of how that search feature works. If you go to slide 11, and there's also a help feature that gives you, you know, access to frequently asked questions and, you know, definitions, and the tutorial is always there if you need it. And kind of an important thing that I'd like to really point out on this slide on 11 is the contact us/feedback button. That basically allows you to generate an email that comes straight to me, and you know, if you're having problems or if you have a question or a suggestion, that's how you get help if you can't figure it out, or that's just how you get a good idea or important information to us. We've really, since January, we've gotten some really good suggestions that we've actually been able to implement since, to include the mapping feature and a few things that have really made a big difference, I think, in how BIT works. So by all means, use that. It comes straight to me, and you'll get a response. So I wanted to encourage full use of that button. Going to slide 12 now, we'll talk about features that are available in BIT when you log in, you know, when you have that password, set up the account. So again, I'd like to encourage you, you can see the web address, the URL in slide 12. It's www.tab.bit.org, and if you open up the separate window, you can either register if it's the first time you need to register, if it's the first time you're trying to get in to the password protected areas, or you log in if you've already done so. The screenshot is kind of a schematic, though, of the features you get into when you've got that password. So it's really the real utility of BIT becomes available. So I'll walk through quickly what you need to do if you're not sure as far as registering or logging in. Slide 13 just basically shows the registration screen. When you click the register button in the upper right corner, you give your first and last name, your email address, and then you type a password you think of on your own twice. You check the little box right above the submit button, and then you click submit. And that should let you in, and you remember your password, because when you get out and you want to get back in, you need to log in with that password. And that's shown on slide 14. Pretty basic stuff, but it's important nonetheless. So I think, but if I could ask anyone who has logged in, I see that a number of people have, but if you could go ahead and send that, click your question mark button and say logged in, I'll get a better sense for how many people we have. Right now I only see about five or so. So.
Oh, there's about 20 plus people that have indicated they've logged in.
Ah, okay. Thanks.
And anybody on the phone lines, real quick verbal check, is anyone on the phone lines logged in?
Yes.
Okay. Very good, yeah.
Yes. Very good. Please do. It'll be boring if you don't. And I try to have you imagine what you should be seeing as we talk about these things. So let's go to slide 15 and get on with it. We're going to talk first about site-specific applications. So if you've got a site, this is what you can do. This is the kind of information you can enter. That's what we're talking about. And before you start clicking around too much, just look at the slide and look kind of at the right side of the slide, and there's a, we'll eventually get to this navigation bar on the left side, and we'll talk about the things that have stars next to them that are circled. So those are the things we're going to kind of review. What's one kind of important thing to know, though, is before you start actually entering data on sites, the way BIT's set up is first you need to set up a program. And then you add the names of the sites in your program. And then you can do things like add funding information that may be applied to those different sites for different things like assessments and cleanups. Then you're in a really good, the best position to actually add and edit site-specific data. So I'm going to walk you through these things. So if you go to slide 16, and also if you click the site inventory data icon on your BIT toolbox screen, let me go back to 15 and just, you'll see that there's a, on slide 15, there's a site inventory data icon. There's also in the left nav bar, a site inventory data link you can click. Go ahead and click that and you will see a screenshot, or you'll see what looks like slide 16, where you need to choose or create a program. That's the first thing you need to do. So what you can do is click the Create a Program button, and you can name a program that you want. Now, let's say I'm living in Happyville, Colorado, and I'm the brownfields coordinator for Happyville. I might want to create a program called the Happyville Brownfields Program. If I'm a tribe, I may, in addition to having a brownfields program, I might want to create a separate solid waste program or RECRA program or AIR program or UST program. So the idea is you create, you know, different programs, you know, one or more for the different types of sites you want to enter data for in BIT. And you just do that by, you know, clicking the Create a Program button and filling it out and then pressing the Continue button, and that brings you back to the site inventory data page. So you do that. Then what you do, once you've got some programs established, is you select the one you want to add the names of your sites to. So if I created a Happyville Brownfields program, I'm going to click the drop down and click that, select it, and then I'm going to notice that the buttons on if you look at slide 16, you'll see that there's a row of program features buttons and a row of site features buttons. You see the program features buttons are lit up and they're active. You can mouse over them and they change colors, and you can click on them and they'll take you places. Well, so that's good. So what you want to do is click Add a Site, and that will allow you to add the names of sites. And you can add anything, do it any way you want. You know, street intersections, street address, you know, any name you type in there will be the name of the site. You type Continue, and you just do that for your sites. And you'll also notice, you know, if you select then one of those sites under, there's a Choose a Site drop down with all the sites you entered. You select one of those, you'll see that the bottom row of buttons are active now. And if you want to remove a site, you can click Remove a Site button. You know, you can now you're ready to do anything in BIT with that, regards to that site. So what we're going to do first, though, and what's a good idea to do first many times is to, if you're setting up programs and just getting started with BIT, is to go ahead and click the Funding Summary button and enter information on funding for the program that a number of your sites are in. So on my separate window with BIT open, I've clicked that Funding Summary button, and we're going to go to slide 17. And that's a screenshot of that funding summary. And I've created a site named Easy Money. It's in Happyville, Colorado, and it's in my Happyville Brownfields program setup. And so in my program I've received a number of EPA grants, and one of the grants I've received is an assessment grant. I received it in December of 2009. You'll see that listed up in the upper left column of the gray area. And it's important to to go ahead and this is what you do. You enter information for each grant or funding source you have, whether it's from EPA or HUD or a local government, whatever, and you establish these grant records for each grant. And the way you do that, you know, a strong suggestion is where it's the window that says new grant name, which is kind of towards the top of the screen there, a good way to do that is to name it according to the source of the grant and the date of the award. And you'll see why later, but that's a good way to name your grants. So you just click on that new grant name field, you type in the name, and then you click the new grant button, and then you're ready to enter specific information into the form, into the page. And I'll just talk about general page navigation real quick. It applies to all data entry in BIT. Basically, there's fields that you just click on, like the fund grant recipient name, where I've typed Happyville in the screenshot you can see. You click there and you type. And each field will actually take something like 250 characters, which generally isn't needed. But you click it and you type the entry. There's other types of entries, like if you look down on the left column of the gray area, it's a source of funding that are drop-down menus. And so there's a set number of choices you have. And you'll see that I've selected that this particular funding source is a EPA Brownfields Assessment Grant. You click that, basically you just click the drop-down and you go to the appropriate entry, click that entry, and then it populates the field for you. And you'll also see there's another drop-down right below it that if it's an EPA grant, you can say whether it's a hazardous substances or petroleum or both type EPA grant. Those are a couple of things that are important. Another thing that's important on pretty much all the screens is in the upper right hand of the gray area on the screen, and that's the instructions link. That gives you, that'll open up a separate window of, you know, instructions or guides to what you need to do in filling out some of these things. That's pretty useful to be aware of. And so you fill out these things, you do it for a number of sources of funding, how many ever you have, then you'll see if you click there's tabs on the gray area where the data is entered. There's fund/grants, and there's funding distribution, there's comments. Every entry screen has a comments tab for the most part. So if there's ever anything that you didn't find a data field for that you wanted to enter some information on, you can click on comments and you can type anything you want and have it saved. Before you click on other tabs or go to other pages, it's really important to save the changes you've made down in the lower left. And you'll see as you mouse over these buttons, they'll light up and you know they're active. And I can't emphasize that more. Always save changes before you leave the screen. So those are some general navigation things. If you click on the funding distribution tab of this funding summary page, you'll see how the funds have been allocated. Say if it was a $200,000 grant, and when you're in the assessment and cleanup pages and all that, you've allocated funds for work at those sites, it'll show up here on this tab. So this is a way you can look and see how you've allocated your funds. It's important to note that you don't allocate the funds here on this screen. You do it when you're entering information about assessments and cleanups and redevelopments. So that's important to know. But anyway, that's kind of how the funding summary thing is set up, and it's a good idea if you're just getting started and you've got a program you're going to move information into BIT for. It's good to go ahead and enter that funding information early. So let's go on to slide 18. Basically, just click find the back to site inventory button or whatever and get back to the site inventory page, which gives you room to go anywhere, and click the site, select the site, make sure you've selected a program and a site in the drop downs, and then click the site data button, and that will take you to that particular site, the site information page for that particular site. And I think that maybe shows up on slide 19. Right. So you can see that I've, on the left nav bar there, the site information option is bolded there so that we know we're there. It says Easy Money site information in white at the top of the gray field. So I know that I'm going to be able to enter some basic information on that site. Again, you'll see drop downs for different things. Again, a lot of these things are things that go onto the property profile form, but there's other additional information as well. So basically, one thing I'll point out that's in the site information thing that was also a suggestion from our beta users was you'll see that there's a parcel and allotment numbers area where you can, if your site actually consists of multiple parcels, they're all kind of owned and contiguous, owned by the same owner, you can add, you know, as many parcels as you want to designate that's part of the way that site's set up. And the way that works is you just enter into the field and click the Add to List, and it just adds that list of, as you can see in slide 19, I've done that for four parcels in my Easy Money site. There's a lot of other information you can add. In testing this, I put a lot of random numbers in here, so they may not make sense too much, but at any rate, it's pretty self-explanatory what's in here. Might also note that there's an ownership tab. I don't have a screenshot of that, but you can click it and see the kind of information that goes in there for the site owner. You can click the PPF status and approvals tab. That has to do with when it's time to submit a property profile form, you enter the EPA program manager you're working with your grants, the name of that person, and the date that the property profile report you're submitting, you know, is being reviewed and approved and things like that. Important to know, though, that that's there. So that's the kind of information that's under site information. If we move to slide 20, that's the site assessment information page. You'll see a lot of familiar entries that you need to make on the property profile form again under the assessment reports tab there. One thing I want to point out is kind of a general navigation thing for not only the assessment but for the cleanup and the redevelopment and reuse pages is this assessment progress table that's kind of in the middle of the form. Basically, if you look at the screenshot on 20, slide 20, you'll see that it's a table that gets filled out when you make entries into the entry fields below this table. I'm going to describe that. So in the case of the assessment progress, basically there's an activity dropdown you select to kind of select what kind of assessment activity has happened. Then you select the source of funding that funded that, and you'll see that when you do that, those funding records you inputted are there for you to choose from. If it's a non-EPA source of funding, you click the second drop down there that says Associated EPA Grant. That helps you identify leverage. For example, if a city grant, some city money was put towards the assessment effort, you would select the assessment grant for that to show that, okay, this is city money that's being applied to it and it's being reported as leverage for the EPA assessment grant. And then you enter, you know, dollars allocated, start dates and completion date of the work. And you'll also notice there's a balance in funding field that's automatically calculated for you based on, you know, the total amount of the grant that you're allocating money from. So you enter all those things, and then you click the new button, and you get a row of data showing up in your progress table there. And so you just do that for the different phases of assessment work done to include, you know, supplementary assessments and cleanup planning. And all this data displays for you, and it in kind of a a way that makes sense. A thing just to mention, a lot of the another navigation thing is that if you see if you mouse over and click on one of the date fields, you'll get a pop-up calendar that you can, with today's date, basically set on today's date. You can, you know, click on that and enter dates like that. If it turns out, if you, you know, let's say that you have a start date, some assessment start date of today, but let's say for some reason this is an assessment that just took forever, like maybe it took a year or something, and so you click on the completion date and you don't want to click month to month to get all the way out to March 2011, you can just click today's date, and that'll enter today's date, and then you can click on, let me see if I can get this to happen, you enter today's date, click OK. You don't click on the, say, today's date, you hit the enter key, and then you can backspace through that date and change it more like to 2011. That's just a quick way to avoid having to do that, but you can see there's ways to get around and do things more quickly is my point with dates, but the pop-ups with the dates are very useful to just to enter something quickly. What you can do once you have rows of data in this assessment progress thing is you can actually take your mouse and click on one of those rows, and you'll see it highlights in black. You've selected that row, and all the data shows up in those data entry fields, and you can go in and edit any of that and click the update button, and now you've updated the information in that particular row. And I'm spending a lot of time on this because there are tables like this also in the sampling, cleanup, and redevelopment reuse pages that we'll be looking at. So once you kind of get familiar with how to do that, it works the same way on all those other pages. Okay, another important thing that's in the assessment page here is the tab at the top called Contamination Info, as well as Cultural Historical Information. There you can enter specific information on those things, and if you go ahead and click the Contamination Information tab, and if we go to slide 21, look at how that works. And again, how you enter data here is similar to how you enter data in some other places, so it's worth spending a little time. Here you have drop-down menus for various types of contaminants or the media affected. You'll see in the screenshot for 21, the media affected, if you click the media affected drop-down, that's what you'll get. You'll get drinking water, groundwater, sediment, soil, etc. So these drop-downs work the same for all these different categories of contaminants at the top, media affected, receptors, targets, contamination pathways, so that, you know, you can log information that has to do with conceptual site models or risk-based cleanups in here that way. And you can see what I did on the screenshot is I had clicked the contaminants drop-down, and I had selected petroleum and petroleum products, and it went ahead and displayed a line in the selected contaminants table there, and it automatically comes up with the REC, you know, recognized environmental conditions. That checkbox comes up checked because presumably you had a phase one done, you read it, and you saw, okay, petroleum and petroleum products is a REC. So it comes up checked, and you can uncheck it if you want, but the whole point is to log the items that are RECs from phase one, and if in a phase two, some sampling work or something was done to actually confirm that it's there in concentrations over requiring action, you check that box. And what you can also do is actually click on the line. Like if I clicked on the petroleum and petroleum products line, it'll become highlighted or selected, and then you'll see that text shows up or text can be entered in the little box below there. And you can see that I entered that this contaminant was found in soil above action limits, but not in water above the detection limit or something. So you can enter specific information there on it. And this is one of those pages where it's very important to click the Save Changes button like it is on basically all of them. But this is, you know, if you don't click that button, the next time you come to it, this data won't be there. So, again, that's how you enter information on contaminants, and you'll see on the cleanup page, that's how you enter information on whether contaminants were addressed or not. And you'll see that what you entered in the site assessment page carries forward to the cleanup page, so all you need to do is check whether it was addressed or not. So it's pretty handy. You don't have to fill stuff out over and over and over again. And so that's kind of how that works. And I'll let you look at the cultural and historical information separately, but there's more detail can be provided on those types of those aspects of a site using that tab. So if we go to slide 22, we're going to look at how sampling data can be entered. Let's say that there was a phase one and then a phase two site assessment and on our site, and we wanted to, for some reason, you know, maybe we want to log what the results of the sampling was for that. We can create a record called phase two assessment, December 09. Maybe, you know, that's a good way to do it is kind of give the nature of the event and the date, and then click the new record button, and then you can enter information, sampling information, kind of the same way you entered the assessment progress information on the earlier field, and you click new sample. It populates the table, and at any time you can go back in and click on one of those lines and update the information, or you can even delete it if you made a mistake or you don't want it anymore. So, and then of course save the changes. That's how that works. You can also enter information on, you know, quarterly groundwater monitoring events or just anything. You know, you decide what it, and how you enter it, but that's kind of the way you go about doing it. So let's move to slide 23. That is a duplicate slide that I didn't mean to have in there. So let's move to slide 24. And let's talk now about, let's say we have this site, we've put information in it, got a lot of different things. Want to upload some documents for future reference. Let's say we have in this case, in the screenshot in 24, I've uploaded a site investigation and cleanup alternatives report for this site, let's say. And how you do that basically is you click your browse button, you get a pop-up window, you know, with a directory on your machine that you can identify a file, and then you click the upload document button, and then you get this blue colored table of list of documents populates with the documents that are now uploaded. If you want to view one of those documents, you just click on it to highlight it and then click the view button. And you'll see that you can get to it that way. You can also go to the site information page that's on your, that link is on your left nav bar kind of towards the top. And if you scroll down, you'll see that there's also links to, you know, view available videos, documents, photographs. You know, you can see what's available quickly for that site there as well. So there's a couple different ways you can get to that. That's how that works. Slide 25 illustrates the mapping feature. So if you were to click, you can actually get to that feature a number of ways. It's either in the quick links on the left nav bar, or sometimes it's in this section, but it's easy to get to as long as you're in the kind of the site inventory tool or in the toolbox mode. How that works basically is you can display one site or all of your sites, and you select that by clicking the drop downs on the upper right corner of the gray area. And what I've done is I've selected my brownfields program, and then I've selected a particular site, and basically you'll get a location icon that pops up wherever that is, and if you click that location icon, you'll also get the caption that appears that gives you the name of the site. Then you can actually click that name of the site, and it'll take you to the site information page for that. So it's one way to actually get into your site information if you rather do it by looking at the maps of where the locations are first. But what you do is you know, once you've got a site located on a map and you don't want to look at the statewide view, you click the center map button, and then you just scroll down, you zoom down to it, and you can get more of a street scale look. And this is tied into Google Earth, and you can also get the satellite view and terrain, and so it's very useful. And I think you'll also notice that if you input the latitude and longitude coordinates of the samples at a site, those will also map for you. So we think this is pretty useful. Okay, on slide 26, the last thing I want to show you on the site-specific applications is the activity log, and you'll see that shows up, again, most of the time you're in the Bit toolbox dealing with at the site level, that shows up, and if you click that, you'll see what you see in slide 26. Basically, it's just a text field that's got a date stamp on it that you can adjust to enter information. One of our tribal representatives who gave input, whose idea this was actually, said, I go to meetings all the time, public meetings, and somebody will come to me that knows something about a site, and they might even have a letter or, a document of some kind, and I just need to make a note of that. And so this activity log might be a way to say, I went to this meeting, I met this person, they gave me this useful document, and I've uploaded it. So anything, any way you want to use this, it could be useful. So that's how that works. All right, on slide 27, we're going to talk now, go into kind of the administrative applications that I've listed here. And that basically deals with what in your navigation bar when you're in the toolbox in the site information area, the site administrative information that's circled and starred on the right of the screenshot in 27. So the complaints, inspection, oversight, and enforcement information, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the generate reports information. So if you click on the complaints item, link there on your nav bar, I think you'll see what we're going to see when we go to slide 28. Sure enough, that's what you see. And I'm just going to show you this for the complaints page, but it's the same setup for the inspection oversight page and for the enforcement page. So again, you can enter a number of events, and again, it's good to name your record according to the kind of the type of event and the date. Click the new record button, and then you've got, I use the example of a noise complaint that our city received and that we logged. And basically, you fill out all the information, and you click save, of course. And then you just do this whenever you receive a complaint, and you put a new date and the nature of the complaint. And this is all about this one particular site. And what you can do after you do this, say you do this not only for some complaints, but then there's been some inspections to follow up on the complaint and maybe even an enforcement action that was taken. You can click, you log that information in the different pages, but at any time, whatever page you're in, you can click the associated events tab that you see is always present, say on the complaint details, next to complaint details tab, and you can see what other inspections and enforcement things have happened at that site, and it just kind of helps you keep in context of what's going on and for quick reference without having to switch from page to page to page. So that's kind of how that works, and that might be more relevant if you're a tribe and you've got a solid waste program and people are calling in complaints maybe about illegal dumping, or if you're a city manager and you've also got the codes and ordinances department under your wing as well, they could use this for that. So that's how things work for some of the administrative information. Now, if we go to slide 29, we'll look at the Generate Reports feature. And again, you can get to that by either clicking the icon on the toolbox display, or there's almost always the Generate Reports option on the left nav bar in the upper or lower section. So if you click Generate Reports, you'll see what your choices are there. And on the slide 29 on the screenshot, I've illustrated that almost all of them are site-specific reports. All but the multiple property profile form are site-specific reports that you can use for a lot of different things. And I've listed in the blue bullets what they can be used for, a number of things they can be used for. They could be used for to print paper files and paper records of things you keep in site files, maybe in your program office. A number of these can be used for attachments that go into your quarterly reports to the EPA regional folks. They could be printed and used for forms to fill out in the field, you know, for site inspections or data gathering efforts. They can also, in the case of the public record report that I put a little star next to, you can also print those and put them in a binder that goes into the publicly available repository that's a requirement for your grants generally, is you have to do that. And of course, you can generate property profile forms as well, multiple property profile forms. The important thing to kind of know about using this page is you need to select make the selection of the type of report first. You need to do that first, and depending on what you select, then your drop downs will, you know, be there for you to select the program and then the specific site. Sometimes the specific record, you know, if you're looking for sampling results or something, or in the case of the multiple property profile form, you can select one or more sites. So unless you click that multiple property profile form thing, you won't be able to select, you know, more than one site, and so it's important to do it in that order. So that's kind of how you get started on that. You select the report, select the program and site, and then click Generate Report. And let's see, you kind of get an idea of what you see next there. Get a couple of examples. So let's go to slide 30. Here's what the public record report looks like. It basically generates a Word file that's already filled out with the data you put in previously. You can also edit it for some reason if you want it to look different color fonts, or even if you want to make entries that in a field or an area to explain something further for this particular use of the form or something, you can do that and just save it. But it comes up in a Word file, you save it to your computer, and then you can print it or do whatever you want to do with it. I also took a screenshot of what you get when you do a multiple property profile form on slide 31. It's kind of, this form is, you know, it's basically the official EPA form that is generated in an Excel file. And we added a couple of notes because for use in getting this submitted properly, because once you get this, you can email it to your regional program grant manager and go over it with him or her, and then it can be sent on. Once you both agree you're ready to go, you can send it on to ACRES, you know, the Assessment, Cleanup, and Reuse Exchange System, and they will put it in ACRES for you. So there's a little note you can see on the upper left, there's a note that for the ACRES people to see that this was generated by BIT, and at the end, there's also instructions about, in the Part 5 approvals part of the slide, you can see there's some information there about what you need to do to get it reviewed by your region first and then send it into ACRES. And so there's a few of those kinds of things. Something you can also do when you generate this is edit it. You can make edits to it. For example, I added after I generated this particular report and put it into the slide, well, actually, when I generated the report, I highlighted or I put the orange, yellow, and green colors in there to kind of delineate each site and each grant that this form is, you know, a report for. So, you know, once it's generated, you can certainly edit it and as needed by the EPA region and yourself to reflect things the way they should be. So that's kind of how that works. And the instructions that are on the individual web page, you know, data entry pages, provide you the information you need about the format for, you know, some of these data entry fields. So it's very important to open those instructions boxes and see what they say as you fill out, as you enter data, at least as when you're first getting started, and then you're a pro and you may not need to so much anymore. Okay, so let's go to slide 32. Now we're going to talk about custom applications. I call them custom applications. It's really just the import and the data search export features. And on this slide, I've listed in the left-hand bar kind of a number of things, you know, a number of reasons you'd want to do this. But basically, it's an easy way to do custom reporting or to get just some of the data that you want to analyze or maybe do roll-ups for. You know, maybe you want to know the dollar figure for all of the assessment work that's been done in your program. You know, this is a way to create an export file or an Excel file that you can do things like, you know, sum totals of or further data analysis. That's one use. Another use is to export a file in Excel that maybe needs to have data added to it. Let's say I'm in my brownfields program and I want to hire a contractor to do a bunch of maybe an area-wide assessment, and I've set up things in BIT, but I don't have the assessment results for all these different sites out there. So I export a file and I say, okay, consultant, part of your job is to go, you know, do the assessment work and then fill out the data related to the assessment, and then re-import it or import it back into BIT so that everything's updated. So that's another thing you can do, is gather more data, and it helps you do that. Another thing you can do if you're a regional organization, like if you're a regional planning agency and there's a lot of cities maybe in your area, those cities can give you access to their program information, and the regional person can do an export of all program information or maybe certain things that they're tracking, or, you know, so that they can generate a map of the whole area, or, you know, figure out the grand total of sites in a whole area or whatever. So there's a lot of reasons you can do this. Another important reason for you to remember to use the export function for is you can also use it to back up the data in BIT in an Excel file that you can re-import later if you have to for some reason. Those are reasons you can use the export. You can import data. An important reason to import data is if you've already got data electronically on site, say you've started working with another database, or maybe you were just doing it with an Excel spreadsheet, you can move that data into BIT very rapidly as opposed to having to retype it all in on the individual data entry screens. So that's an important reason to use the import data. And we've talked about some of this other information, and I'll make a few more points as we go. So first thing we're going to talk about is the data search and export. So if you want to click that icon and get there, we'll go to slide 33. And I haven't included all the screenshots that happen here, but here's kind of the instructions of how to do it. Very important to follow the instructions, whether it's in the gray field or if there's an instruction link on the upper right corner, which there isn't in this case, but read those instructions, especially for the export and the import function or you might get some results you don't want. Basically, though, you follow kind of similar steps. You select where the number one is. You select a program you want to do an export or a search for. You can select all of your programs if you want, and that'll do a raw dump of all your data into a file. But you can also, more commonly, you'd probably be selecting a specific program, and then you click on the number two thing here is to add a category to search for. Again, if you don't add any categories to search for, you can just click the search button, and you'll get a list of sites in that particular program that you selected to export. You can, you know, it's really set up to arrive at a list of sites that meet certain criteria. And if you don't establish any search criteria, you'll just get a list of sites. So let's, either way, you set up criteria or using the drop-downs, or you just click search. Eventually, you click search, and we'll go to show you what. One point I'd like to make is at the bottom of slide 33. If you select the all programs, you can't define search parameters for that. All you can do is get a raw dump of everything, and then once it's in your Excel file, if you want to do some sorting or editing, you can do that then. But BID isn't set up to search across programs. It'll only search within programs to give you a list of sites that meet that criteria. Okay, 34. Slide 34 kind of shows you what happens that when you click that search button. You get an intermediate screen that's the list of these sites. This is a list of sites in my Happyville Brownfields program in the kind of the upper left screenshot. What you do there is you either use the check boxes to click the ones you're interested in, or you just click the export all button. That gives you another intermediate step of all the different categories of information or data that exist for that site, and you click the ones you're interested in, or just click export all, and you get an Excel, and it generates an Excel file for you. And this is just a partial image of that file, but they all look like this. Column B has the name of the site, and then you'll see column C, there's a site information column or category of information. That's the beginning of the site information. And then the assessment, sampling, cleanup, all that stuff is to the right on that same row as the easy money, you know, cell number B5 in row 5. So that's kind of how it comes out. And it's important, there's a kind of a little warning statement at the very top that says don't alter the fields with the black bar across the top in row 4, because there's some things in there that if it alters it won't, your spreadsheet won't work correctly, or you won't be able to re-import it for sure. So don't mess with that black bar area. That's the bottom line there. So that's how you create a Excel spreadsheet that meet, you know, with site information that meet particular criteria you were looking for. Let's go to slide 35. I think we're going to start looking at how to import information. Okay, and this is there's a number of steps, and it's hard to make 50,000 screenshots of things, so I just tried to summarize it here. It's pretty straightforward though. Basically, when you're importing data, you're taking an Excel file that's in the proper format. So it basically needs to be in the same format as the export files are in. And there's a way to get that if you want to just click the blank template button. You see in the screenshot there's a blank template button both on the search export page and on the import page. That will give you an Excel file it's a blank Excel file, but you can add site names to it and site data and then import it if you want. And it's in the proper format of columns and so forth. But let's say I've got a file, an Excel file that has some data, some new data in it that I want to add into BIT for a site that I already have. First step, I need to explain, is, you know, before you can import anything into BIT, you have to have a site, and you know, I have to have a program and a site set up to receive the data. So let's say you're going to start using BIT from scratch. You've already got a lot of site data and Excel files that you want to just do a raw, you know, import into BIT, so you don't have to import, so you don't have to enter all that data separately in separate screens. You can do that, but first you have to set up a program with the correct site names. Then you can do an import of your data into it. And so this is how it would work. You select your program under number one here on the screenshot. Shows you use the drop down to select the program you want to import data into. Then you click the browse button to find the Excel file that has the data you want to import. You click the import button, and you'll get a display where it says for make selections. You'll get a display of all the sites that BIT recognizes in your import file, and you'll need to check, you know, that yes, I want to import number one, Easy Money, and I want to import it to Easy Money. If you look to the right side of that for field, there's an Easy Money selected in a drop-down for which site to import it to. And then you also make selections as to what you want to happen. Do you want the data in the file to append records, like sampling records and funding records, or do you want to override it, or do you want to do nothing? Do nothing is the default, so you can't accidentally overwrite stuff. But you say whether you want to append or overwrite or merge in these drop-downs here. Then you click the preview button, which is number 5, and it will show you, it will give you a pop-up, and it'll show you what's currently in the Easy Money site in BIT. Then it'll show you what you're trying to import, and then it'll show you what it'll look like after it imports based on the settings you made. So you can make really sure you're not going to zero out something or replace something with something you didn't want. So it's really important to do that step. Once you're satisfied you're doing the right thing, you click the import button, number 6, and if it works, you will get a green message at the bottom of the page that says the spreadsheet was successfully imported. Then you can go in and, you know, verify it on the site-specific pages that really happened. So there's, you know, there's a few steps to take, but it's possible to do it. We're still working to figure out how many sites you can actually do this for at once. And we, you know, theoretically it's a whole bunch, like maybe 1,000 or something, but we have had some glitches, so it's important now when you're first trying these things to maybe set up a dummy import site or several sites that you're trying to import data into and test it before you actually, you know, risk overriding a bunch of data you've already got in BIT or something. And report problems if you're having problems. But the key on the importing is just to make sure you use the right format so that you use an export file or you use the blank template to put data in before you import it. That's the real key. Okay, let's move to 36. That's basically, you know, we're to the summary slide of this. And so I guess if I had to give a summary in one slide, this is what I'd say. Always save your changes before you move to the next slide. When there's multiple records involved, say for the funding or for the sampling, complaints, inspections, enforcement pages, you know, name them in a way you can quickly recognize what the record is later when you go to pull it up. So generally, I've suggested that you use things like funding source and date you got the funding, or the nature of the event, like if it's a quarterly sampling event and the date, or, you know, if it's a noise complaint or something that's easy, you can just at a glance figure out, okay, that's the one I need when you're in later working on this in BIT. So that's important. It's important too, you know, especially once you get a lot of data in your into BIT, to periodically back up your data by doing an export of all the data, basically. Then it's in an Excel file, and if something goes wrong with the data that's in Bit, you can always re-import it and not have to start over again. We haven't had any big problems or anything, but it's just a word to the wise with anything with computers. It's good to back it up once in a while. And also to use a dummy site to get familiar with how the import feature works. Last and also very important to us is to give us feedback. Use that contact us feedback link at the upper right corner that's always there, and we'll be glad to take your suggestions and also to work run down bugs. Okay, the slide 37 is time for us to look at questions and answers. And before I do that, I'd like to just acknowledge a number of organizations and people. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge EPA headquarters for funding, providing the funding for this and the TAB program. Region 8 and their contractor for setting up the initial Microsoft Access version of this. They did a great job. It really was a good tool. And it basically, we just replicated 80% of what that was. So they get the credit for that. I'd also like to thank my colleagues at K-State and the TAB program. That's Sabina Martin, Terry Boguski, Wendy Griswold, and a number of other partners that are on this session now, like Dave Voigt. We put a lot of work into this and review almost most importantly, I'd like to thank Cabum Technologies, who are our software programmers that put this together and that continue to work on bugs and enhance things. They've done a wonderful job. I'd also like to thank the EPA Acres folks for meeting with us and showing us a way for you to submit your multiple property profile forms easily into Acres just by emailing it to them, basically. I'd also like to thank the beta testers. We had a lot of the new features of Bit are from their suggestions, and so thanks to those individuals as well. So at this time, I'd like to maybe turn things back over to Jean, or I can scroll through the
Well, I think I'll be happy to kind of serve as your moderator here. And the first group, I want to thank you for the presentation and just remind people that we're going to have a few moments here on the line to answer any questions or comments that you might have for the instructor today. If you have muted your phone lines, I'm going to start by opening those up. Either unmute your own line or simply hit #6 to take yourself off of mute, and feel free to speak up if you have a comment or question.
Hey, Jean, I was going to ask quickly, though, do we want to try to address any of the comments that have come in?
We're going to get to those as soon as we check with the phone people first.
Thank you.
I apologize, because they got hit with that little bit of morning delay when we switched lines, so I'm going to let them speak first again. Oh. Any comments or questions from the phone lines?
I put everybody to sleep.
No, I think they're all busy clicking away. Well, in the meantime, again, feel free to speak up at any point if you do have a comment or question. Make sure you hit #6 to take your phone off of mute. But we do have some comments that came in, and I think we're going to start with the first one that comes in from New Jersey. And you've already addressed it, but just to make sure everybody heard it and caught it. They basically ask, a good deal of the data entry fields in Bit are similar to data filed through Acres. Can Acre files be linked to Bit so that many fields can be filled out from the Acres file directly?
That's a good question, and we've thought about that. And the answer is no. Right now there isn't a way to kind of be able to fill out stuff in Bit or in Acres and have it, kind of update each other that way. The suggestions from the Acres folks that I think is a good one is that it's good to use one or the other to actually input, to actually enter and edit, site-specific information through the entry screens, it's important that if you're using Bit to, you know, when you email in the multiple property profile form, it's important to alert the Acres people, which there is an alert on the form itself, but even in your email, it's good to say, hey, I'm sending this in. It's from BIT. It was generated with BIT. Then they'll know how to dump it in, but they have to make a separate step to just take that and put it in Acres. And so it's probably better to use one or the other, the answer to your question. It'd be pretty difficult for a number of reasons to get them linked much closer than that, although we are going to look at a simpler way to submit the property profile form. But we don't envision, and I don't think they do, envision a kind of a deal where you could be using one or the other just at any given time.
Okay, great. The next question, I'm going to skip one because I think you've kind of addressed it. What's the difference between BIT and Acres reporting? And there's one other comment that came in again asking about transfer between the two, and I think you've covered that there. But I will direct anyone, if they have more specific questions on that, they can always reach out and contact you or the other points of contact that are listed on the additional resources page.
Sure.
But for now, the next question that I have that came in online, they ask, will the success of future grant applications depend on the grantee's use of this tool?
Sure. I'm not the EPA, so I can't say officially whether it will or not, but I'm pretty sure it won't depend on, you know, oh, let me read it more carefully. I think I read it wrong. Will the success of the future grant applications depend on the... No, I think it's quite possible for folks to get grants, whether they're going to use BIT or not. But what BIT does do is it makes it easier just to fulfill the grant requirements. You know, it's an easy way to do site inventories and to submit your quarterly reports or your property profile forms and to meet the public record requirement. And it's just an easy way to do what you are required to do, but it won't, you know, you won't be, I'm sure that no one will be required to use BIT to do it all.
Okay, great. The next question comes in from Chicago, and they ask, do I have to be an EP grantee to use the system?
Nope. No, this is, you can be a person that found it on the web because you Googled it and you want to store environmental site data on it. It's completely available for anyone to use. I actually met with somebody from Nigeria who's on our campus now, and I told them, you know, they have a lot of oil spills and oil production problems and brine spills and stuff, and I mean, they could conceivably use this to address a number of different spill sites. You know, it has nothing to do with our situation over here.
Okay. The next question I have that came in online, and this is a reminder, if you do have any comments or questions, you can also submit them by clicking on that orange button with a question mark in it. You want to be sure your pop-up blockers are disabled. But the last one I have right now, unless you see something else, comes in from New Jersey, and they say some states, like New Jersey, already have their own program, such as NJEMS, which is the New Jersey Environmental Monitoring System. And he asks, are states being encouraged to adopt the BIT program for their brownfield sites?
Well, you know, from where I sit, we're not encouraging anyone to do anything, really. We're just encouraging people to be aware that this is out there and it's compatible. You can export and import things from other systems, or you can use it in lieu of other systems, but it's certainly not, I don't think there's any advocacy really going on. Deborah or somebody from EPA could comment on that better than me. But it's really just a tool, and we figure if it's really useful and valuable, people will use it, and it'll help them do good things.
Okay, great. Are there any other final comments or questions from the phone lines?
This is Deborah in Region 5. Can I make a comment, please?
Go right ahead, Deb.
Okay. First of all, there's a couple of things. I have a couple of ways that I would like to respond to some of the questions or issues. We're obviously not mandating that any entity adopt or use this resource, but I think what's important to note is that by using this resource, where obviously EPA has already paid for the creation of it via the TAB programming, a community can really save funds, save their grant dollars. and that would be a good thing. They can use those dollars that they save to invest in more assessments and possibly more cleanups. And then the second thing is this has certainly proven to be a very useful tool. I've been very impressed as you've gone through, and I want to thank you very much, Blaze, for taking the time and the initiative to update this program.
You're welcome. And I'd like to thank you, Deb, for your effort to promote this, and both while we were encouragement to do it as well as to get the word out on it. And we think it will be very helpful and, you know, in a lot of different ways.
Okay, we had a couple more questions that came in online. One of them is coming from West Virginia, and they ask, where are the data stored?
A good question. Thanks. I wanted to make that really clear earlier, and I forgot to. The data is stored on the server that runs BIT. So CABEM Technologies, our program contractor or consultant, has a server that BIT resides on and, you know, runs from, and the data actually is stored there in password-protected accounts, you know, that users set up. And so that's important to know. And one reason we're doing a desktop version of BIT is because some users might not be comfortable with having all their data on a server somewhere that's probably secure and that is secure, but still, you know, if they may feel that some of their data is sensitive and they'd rather just have it on their machine. And so the desktop version that we're producing that'll be available later this year can be downloaded, and then BIT, so to speak, and all the data that you enter using it would reside on your hard drive. And we don't think it'll be able to store as many, you know, sites worth of data, but it'll still be able to store plenty for most people's use. And you know, you won't be able to do the same kind of granting access, let's say, if outside of a local network, it probably won't be possible for you to say, I want my consultant to be able to have access and update my data for me because they're in a different place. That would be more of a web-based capability. But nonetheless, it's possible to, it'll be possible to store that data and run it completely from your own desktop machine.
Okay. We have another question that comes in from Ohio, and they ask, can we become aware of other users in our county, or if we might be the first ones to use the tool?
We can give some indication of the users. Because of, you know, privacy issues and stuff, all we can kind of look at is domain names of emails and some real general kinds of things. I'm not sure if we're able to really give that specific amount of information, although we can post some voluntary forms people can fill out, but, you know, whether people take the time to do that, sometimes it isn't clear. I would think if you got using it today, you might be the first in your county to use it.
Okay, and the next question is similar to that. It comes from New Jersey, and they ask, can you search for sites on BIT via location, such as state or county?
Yes. I will say that in testing this, we've run into a few problems sometimes with the search. It's still a little buggy, but I believe you can. I mean, I've done it before, so I know it can do it. I would just encourage folks that as they're doing their searches that they report problems if they have any. But that's the whole idea, is that, you know, if you wanted to get a list of sites that are in the cleanup phase, because you know that those are the sites you have to do your public record report on, you should be able to define that parameter and then get a list of sites that, you know, match that. Same with a zip, you know, what are the sites in a certain zip code or you know, any parameter that you've input, basically, other than a site name, because it's easy to get that kind of a list, should give you that kind of a list out of sites that meet that criteria.
Okay, I don't think I see any more online questions that have come in, and I don't hear anybody else on the phone lines. Again, you can hit #6 to take your phone off and mute if you have a final comment or question. Blaze, did you have any closing remarks that you'd like to make?
Other than I think you're going to maybe cover the points in 38, slide 38.
Yep.
So I'll chime in there if I think of anything else, but I think I'm all right now.
Okay. Deb, do you have any other closing comments to make?
Only to thank people for attending, and hopefully this will be a good tool for not only Region 5, but other communities in the nation.
Great. Thank you so very much. With that, I'm going to direct everyone to the final slide in today's presentation, which is slide number 38. And on that slide, you'll find the two resources we mentioned when we started things off. There are two links, the first one to the additional resources page, where if you follow that link, which is also accessible via the seminar homepage, you'll be able to take a look at materials that are related to today's presentation, including today's PowerPoint slides, links to the BIT homepage, as well as other points of contact if you have other comments or questions. And I believe we have some plans to add some additional resources, perhaps some movie clips or further tutorials in the future. So feel free to take a look at that resources page when we're done today. The second and final link on that page, on slide number 38, is the feedback form, which we would ask that you take just a minute or two to fill it out. It's very short. I do personally read each and every one of those. So if you had technical problems or had any issues today, let us know. There are also BIT-specific questions on there that I believe the people that work on it are going to use to help future developments and to work on the project. So we do ask that you take just a second or two to fill out that feedback form. It will also be used if you need confirmation of your participation today. There's a box you can check on the feedback form to have a confirmation email sent to your own email account. If you are sharing a line with someone, once you fill the feedback form out, there's a link that will appear that will allow someone else to fill out the same form so each person can get their own confirmation email. I just wanted to remind everyone as well and apologize again for the late start. We did have some problems on the phone line, but looks like we're able to get everyone moved over to the new line okay. This entire event was recorded, so if you did miss part of the beginning or opening slides, the entire archive will be made available within a week or so via the CLUIN website so that you can replay the entire session. We will also automatically send an email link to all of the registered telephone participants with that download information, so that in case you weren't able to join us today, we'll be able to still transfer that information to you. So I want to thank everyone for their time and their patience, especially with the late start today. I want to thank everybody who helped put the presentation together, as well as the sponsors and organizers here at EPA and those from Kansas State. And I want to hopefully see one of you or all of you on a future CLUIN seminar down the road. Again, when you're all said and done, if you go to cluin.org/training, you'll be able to take a look at other free online technical trainings that we offer like this, as well as sign up for our free podcast in iTunes via CLUIN. So again, thank you. I'm going to formally conclude today's seminar now and hope everyone has a great rest of their day. Thanks so very much.
And then that is, sure. if people would like to see anything like live on this, we might be able to put some kind of a WebEx live demo thing together for small groups of people in the future. So, if you're on the phone and you're trying to imagine all this, maybe because you didn't have an internet connection, we'd be glad to find another way to do something live. And so just contact us and let us know.
Okay, great. And you'll find his contact information on the seminar homepage as well as on the additional resources page if you need that. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much.